Hello, I'm Billy Shields, and this is number 0241, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0241. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, Dr. James Hubbard, author of Living Ready Pocket Manual, First Aid. He shares some home remedies because some of Mom's remedies actually did work.
Certainly a lot more correct than we thought as we were teenagers and there beyond. And doctors are finally getting into some of those things because there have been studies on some of these things showing that they actually do work. And that's what we like to see.
Science writer Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, talks about the recent meteorite incidents in Ontario.
It fragmented very high up in the atmosphere, somewhere around 50 to 70 kilometers in altitude. The smaller fragments, golf ball size, probably at the larger ones, rained down over a large area, probably lying around somewhere in a farmer's field right now.
Professional organizer Amanda LeBlanc shares some tips on decluttering your life. You can do it in several phases.
The second phase is where you start grouping and categorizing items together, where whether it's a garage where you get all your tools together and realize you have 20 hammers, or you pull all of your clothing together and realize you have 30 black shirts. Once you group items together, it helps you to make that second phase of letting go and saying, okay, I definitely have too many of these. So now that I see them together, these are the better of this group, and these are the ones I want to keep.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0241, was Billy Shields, a reporter at Global News Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Billy, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 21-year-old Kevin Walters staged an emotional, though unsuccessful, one-man chained-to-the-door protest in March to prevent the closing of a commercial rest stop along the Jane Addams Memorial Tollway near DePlain, Illinois. Ultimately, the DePlain Oasis housing shops and fast food restaurants will be demolished as part of a highway widening project. Now, Williams told WBBM Radio that his poignant attachment to the Oasis was because his parents had told him that this was where he was conceived as they returned home from a 1992 Phil Collins concert. What? And Kevin couldn't get Phil Collins to buy the rest stop and save it? Huh. Well, anyway. You know, icicles are dangerous. Anybody can tell you that. They can damage your house, they can drop down from the edge of your roof and puncture your skull, but nobody hates icicles more than one Kentucky man who risked everything in his crusade against the clinging, frozen menace. Not content to simply knock them down with a broom or a shovel, this unnamed homeowner terminated the icicle's menace threatening his house with extreme prejudice. Extreme prejudice and a blowtorch. I think you can guess how this story is going to turn out, right? Firefighters were called to the home to find smoke pouring from the roof of the house. They were able to extinguish the blaze, but not before the roof and attic, as well as a new addition to the home, were heavily damaged. The homeowner told fire officials he was worried family members might be injured by icicles hanging from the roof of his home, so he used a blowtorch to melt them and then promptly left home to run errands. According to Lieutenant Colonel Rick Harrison from the fire department, he said, obviously, you want to remove them as safely as you can. Breaking them off is what most people do. Choosing to use a torch to melt them, in hindsight, he probably agrees, is not the best idea. Yeah. I'm also guessing that after firefighters doused the house with water to put out the flames, he now has a lot more icicles. Anyway, moving right along, a Georgia man who is accused of impersonating a police officer in order to get a free continental breakfast at a Dunwoody hotel has been arrested. Rock Harris was charged with impersonation of a police officer, simple battery, theft by taking, and loitering and prowling. Now, in December, Harris went to the Staybridge Hotel and attempted to eat the Continental breakfast, even though he was not a guest at the establishment. When he was confronted by staff, Harris allegedly threw hot water in the manager's face. Last month, Harris returned to the hotel and displayed a badge in his attempt to pass himself off as a law enforcement officer in order to get free food. According to Officer Tim Fecht, Harris returned to the hotel on Sunday and began taking food again. Employees called 911 after recognizing the 36-year-old Harris, and he was taken into custody. Well, mission accomplished. Because, you know, where he's going, he'll be able to get free breakfasts. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and speaking of impersonations, a man fooled a town in England into thinking that he was their mayor by setting up a fake Twitter account. A man going by the name James Billington created the Twitter handle @mayorofstafford with a bio saying he's, quote, delighted to be representing the town of Stafford and surrounding areas. He sent his first tweet out on March the 8th, and the people of Stafford quickly bought into it. Billington staged a ribbon-cutting ceremony at a local theme park and even passed around "I'm the Mayor of Stafford" buttons. The Stafford Town Council caught on to the hoax and asked Twitter to shut the account down. The real mayor is Angela Longren, and people were feeling a bit foolish for being duped. According to Stafford resident Bal Singh, "I feel stupid. I believe James Billington was mayor. How many people know the name of their town mayor? There was no reason to disbelieve him." Wow. The Twitter account is still active and tweeting his imaginary mayoral duties. Still. Okay. Now there was a telling quote that I just mentioned a few moments ago. How many people know the name of their town mayor? Wow. Talk about apathy. I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The great thing about democracy is that you always get the government you deserve. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Spring is here, and millions will be taking advantage of the eventual nicer weather to enjoy the great outdoors. But part of that outdoorsy life includes bug bites, scrapes, sprains, and allergic reactions. So what do you do about them? Well, on the line with us right now is Dr. James Hubbard, the survival doctor. He's also the author of the new survival book, Living Ready Pocket Manual First Aid. And he's here to share some proven natural remedies. James joins us on the line from Colorado. Hi, James.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So is it one of those situations that our moms or grandma was always right and when it came to home remedies that some of these things actually really work?
Always. Might be a little strong, but certainly a lot more correct than we thought as we were teenagers and there beyond. And doctors are finally getting into some of those things that, because there have been studies on some of these things showing that they actually do work, and that's what we like to see.
Well, you say that doctors are finally joining on to these things. These are ideas that have been around for a long time. Wouldn't it have made sense years ago to actually try to disprove them if they didn't work, as opposed to just assuming they didn't work?
Yeah, it would, but that costs money, and to do those studies, it takes to do a really good study, you have to have a lot of statistical analysis behind it, and you have to do it just right, and it can take some, not only some time, but a lot of money to do that, and unless you have a government or a company or something getting behind that, they're sometimes hard to do, and there's so many also.
Now, when we talk about medical remedies as opposed to home remedies, the one thing about medical remedies is that you always hear of possible side effects. I'm just wondering, do any of the home remedies ever have any side effects that we have to concern ourselves with?
That's a great point and something I like to point out. Just because it's natural, just because it's a home remedy, does not mean it is any safer than any other medicine. Anything that I like to say, anything that affects the body, you know, that positively can also do negative harm. There's interactions with medications, not only other natural medicines, but prescription ones. There are side effects, like you said. Things can go bad.
So give us an idea of some of the things that we can use. For instance, I understand honey works well as an antibacterial ointment.
Honey is a great thing because it's been around forever, it's natural, and there's a lot of studies actually behind that, medical, showing that, yes, among other things, honey is a great antibacterial for wounds, for skin wounds and things, and it has some proven type of qualities. Number one is that the honey dehydrates the bacteria. That's kind of been known for quite a while, but secondly, when the honey combines with your fluids in your body, it makes a little peroxide type substance, and so that kills. And then there are a lot of antibacterial type of qualities that we really don't know about honey exactly, but they're out there and we know them and we're still trying to study them. Some honeys have them more than others.
Now, when we talk about something, for instance, like this, like honey, when I'm thinking of the old wives' tales or what our grandmothers used to do, it was a honey that may have been more pure, because nowadays when we go into the stores and buy things, there are things that are added to them. Do we have to be concerned when we're using an old wives' tale that we're using something as pure and natural as we possibly can?
Well, that's what you need to use. In this case, it's the pure raw honey that you want. You don't want something that's been processed because it can take some of those antibacterial properties away. So you can get your honey around, you know, the area. Some will have more antibacterial properties than other, and it's going to be hard to tell, but all of it has a great deal of that. Now, the big thing about honey is don't give it to children under about 2 years old. Actually, it's more like one, but I like to say two just to be safe, because there can be little bacterial spores in honey, and they've never shown to help cause any infection or any problem in adults or large children. But in small children, they've been enough that they've actually caused some serious problem, has actually been implicated in a couple of deaths.
Now, this is one item that caught my eye. Headache stretches. What exactly is that?
Yeah, you're going to have to probably go on my website to look at those. But they're just basically neck stretches. You know, the head, obviously the head and neck muscles are connected and they interact. And so if you'll start those stretches early when you have a tension headache, and even they can sometimes help migraines. And they're pretty easy to do, but it just stretches out those muscles of your neck around and it relaxes them and it can get rid of the headache.
You mentioned your website. That's the survivaldoctor.com, right?
That is correct.
And what are some of the things besides, I guess, a way to see how to do headache stretches? What will people find when they go to your website?
Oh, I have all sorts of posts on there. I have videos, how to take a ring off if your finger's swollen, how to get rid of something under your eye if you don't see it, and how to clean a wound, how to repair a wound. And I probably have now, I don't know, probably 200 posts on different things that happen that you need to know how to treat and or at least need to know something about, because what I'm all about is teaching people, regular people, how to handle medical problems when 911 is not available during a disaster or a hike or camping or just if it's late for some reason, you know, and so knowing those things is what I think everybody should know.
And I mentioned in the introduction your book, which is called Living Ready Pocket Manual. This one's called First Aid, Fundamentals for Survival. These are the types of things you talk about in the book?
It is, and actually the book and my website go beyond first aid. We talk about first aid, but we go beyond that. What happens if 911 or you don't have medical help that's right around the corner? What can you do for these things? What happens after you stop the bleeding? You know, how do you clean the wound? How do you assess it? What do you do for it? How do you keep infection down? What do you do for breathing problems or chest pain or headaches or whatever? And I also have on the website, if you'll sign up for my newsletter, I have a free downloadable incredible list of suggested things that I suggest you have on hand, medical supplies for the house, for the car, for your backpack. And it's not a big list either. If you have the knowledge on how to use certain household items, you can use those, if it came to it, and they'll work for at least a short time as well as some of the medical stuff.
Now, these natural remedies you're talking about and keeping them in the house and being prepared or in your backpack or your car, are these things that you have to replenish because they don't age well? Or
Some of them not. Now, honey will last forever.
Okay.
I know you just heat it up if it gets crystallized don't boil it or anything. You might boil out some of the properties, but yeah, that'll last forever. Now, some of your, mostly it's your medications and things that, your over-the-counter stuff that you might use in typical fashion, and also herbs or things like that. You'll need to watch for the expiration date. Most over-the-counter medicines and antibiotics and things can last longer than their expiration date, sometimes a lot longer. But, of course, if you have your choice, you need to replenish them. I would suggest if you use something like that regularly, go to the use up initially what has the earliest expiration date and put another one in its place.
Right. Now, a couple of other things I wanted to ask about, talking about some home remedies. This one I found interesting. Cherry juice can reduce soreness after exercising?
Yeah, that was an interesting study. I mean, and that's a good time to talk about this now, too, because people are going to be out doing the weekend warrior stuff or getting out a lot. And there were some studies showing that some cherry juice, and I have the posts on my website, taken for a few days before you do some regular exercise, that's the way to do it best, at least, will decrease the muscle soreness. And just like everything else, there are side effects. I mean, some people have some diarrhea if they ate too many cherries and things like that. But so you got to be careful with that. But otherwise, yes, they can definitely work. At least the studies show that.
And also, since people are getting out and maybe going into the great outdoors, the concerns about poison ivy rashes, there are several ways, inexpensive options to soothing those situations with poison ivy?
Yeah, there are. Now, I got to say that if you have a bad poison ivy, it starts getting you the rash on there, you're going to have some problems no matter what. But there are some home remedies that do work to help that. The best thing, of course, would be to try to get, if you get into something that you think might be poison ivy, even if you think it, go in and wash off, with soap and water within about 10 minutes. And most of the time, that oil won't have reacted with your skin and you won't get it. There's another thing, but you got to be careful and know your botany or your plants. But jewel weed is out usually in the same place as poison ivy. The horror I have, though, is that you get into the poison ivy, you think you got some jewel weed and rub poison ivy all over you. So you need to know what it is. But it can, rubbing that on you, rubbing those leaves and getting the sap or whatever that is in the leaves in you, can wash off some of that oil and make it better if you're out somewhere and you couldn't get to water.
Excellent. And you mentioned there's a newsletter that people can sign up for, right, on your website?
There is a newsletter. I keep up to date on what new posts I'm putting out, new information. I'm putting out some more books and some DVDs and some things this year. It'll keep you up with that. And sometimes I'll comment on some regular news items that might not be enough for a regular post, but I think of interest to my readers.
James, thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us and making us feel a little safer.
Thank you.
Dr. James Hubbard. Again, his book is Living Ready Pocket Manual, First Aid. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0241, and you'll find links to both James's website and also to where you can sign up for his newsletter, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, about meteorites. Plus, we'll meet a professional organizer to help declutter your life. And, of course, we'll hear about an idiot of the day. We always have one of those. But right now, lots more Stuff File news here in a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, among the websites whose stunning visual sophistication lies in stark contrast to their marginal importance in the world is Carpets for Airports. Yes, apparently still the go-to site for viewing and judging air terminal floor coverings around the world. Singapore's carpet consists of an indescribably erratic, psychologically terrifying design, while Lima's Jorge Chavez International Airport is muted and calming, appropriate for the nervous traveler who is about to experience an Andes Mountain takeoff. The least ambitious of all so far is Denver's featureless non-pattern, settled on in 2001 after religious fundamentalists objected to the evolution-enabled images on its original carpeting. And you know, after taking a look at this site, I kind of lamented the few moments I spent looking at it that I'll never get back again. Heck, you know, just thinking about it, I'm kind of lamenting the moments I've shared this story as time I'll also never get back again. Anyway, a Romanian man went to a hospital complaining of pain in his esophagus after he swallowed a fork on a drunken bet. Radu Kalichenscu, age 25, didn't tell doctors why he was experiencing the pain, but when doctors did an x-ray, they found the utensil lodged in his esophagus. Radu explained that he was drunk when he bet his friends that he could swallow a fork without any consequences. The doctors decided not to operate and instead sent the man home with hopes that the fork would be expelled from his body through natural processes. Doctors say they will operate if the fork becomes lodged in the man's digestive tract. So, let me get this straight. When he first went to the doctors, he didn't tell them what he had swallowed until after they took an x-ray. Well, clearly, Radu is speaking with a forked tongue. Yeah, I know. Too easy. Police in Phoenix, Arizona learned that Layla Sadakovich was trying to buy heroin from her clients and set up a sting. Sure enough, she bought $200 worth of what she thought was heroin, but was really a substitute lookalike, from an undercover cop and was arrested. Layla, who was 35, was a caseworker for the state's Child Protective Services, and she showed up for the buy in her state-issued car. She has been fired. Yeah. Makes you wonder who protects the state's children from their protectors in this case, huh? Yeah. Now, according to a post on a French website, a math teacher threatened his students with Game of Thrones spoilers if they did not start behaving. The teacher thought of the punishment after he asked how many of his 70 students watched the popular HBO show, and nearly 75% raised their hands. "Well, I've read all the books," he told the class. "If there is too much noise, I will write the names of the dead on the board. There are enough to fill the whole year, and I can describe how they die." There was some giggling. So the unnamed teacher proceeded to list the names of the characters who died in season 3 of the show. The fourth season, by the way, will debut on April the 6th. Anyway, the student who posted about the situation wrote that there was a religious silence after the teacher wrote the names on the board and referred to the teacher as a genius. Yes, genius indeed. I mean, that's sheer brilliance. Anyway, we have one more item before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program. In tribe-controlled areas of India, children who disrespect their families by marrying outside their castes are still occasionally put to death despite strong national laws. However, enlightenment is advancing, and Mr. Sidnath Sharma recently filed a lawsuit instead against his caste-straying son for, quote, destroying the family tradition and lowering his father's prestige. Sharma, a lawyer in Patna, India, is demanding that the son pay a monthly royalty of the equivalent of $163 for the son's now unauthorized use of his father's name. Boy, if a case like this were ever possible in North America, it would make Bob DiRigo Jones's head spin. But he'll be here later with the latest edition of Let's Be Fair, so stick around for that. And by the way, I'm wondering if any future grandsons would have to pay a royalty too. Just asking. Let's get to our next guest, shall we? Canadian and NASA researchers believe one or more fragments of a rare and valuable meteorite may have landed near St. Thomas, Ontario, after a fireball streaked across the sky in southern Ontario almost 2 weeks ago. It's just one of several recent sightings. So this is a perfect time to bring back science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, to talk about it. He joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
So we had these meteorites. We had more than one sighting in the Ontario area. And, of course, you know, the Chicken Little fans think the sky is falling, but everyone else is thinking, oh, this is amazing. This is great scientific stuff. As I mentioned in the introduction, I keep hearing the term valuable meteorite. Why is it valuable?
Well, to scientists, this is, if we look at it from the science perspective, it's very, very valuable because what we're talking about when we pick up and we crack open a meteorite, I should say, we're looking back in time. We're really looking back into the earliest moments of the formation of the solar system, the sun, that includes the sun and the family of planets. So, you know, when you're looking at a meteorite and you're analyzing the chemical contents, the mineral contents of it, you're really getting a picture of what the solar system was like when the Earth and its neighboring worlds were just forming. So it's a snapshot back in time. It's sort of a cosmic archaeological find, basically, and it teaches us really where we all come from. So now, scientists don't have many of these around, and there's a large variety of types of meteors out there. So each one is very unique, and it teaches us a little bit more about our ancient past.
Now we're talking about either golf ball or baseball size fragments. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the original rock, the one that looks like streaked over southwest Ontario, originally was something the size of a basketball, maybe a little bit larger, like a microwave oven perhaps. But it fragmented very high up in the atmosphere, somewhere around 50 to 70 kilometers in altitude. And then the smaller fragments, you know, golf ball size probably, the larger ones, rained down over a large part of a large area, probably lying around somewhere in a farmer's field right now.
And since it is lying around, perhaps in a farmer's field somehow, somewhere, and stories in the media have mentioned that, at least scientifically, this is a valuable piece of commodity, is there any concern, because people are going to go looking for it, obviously, is there any concern either over a period of time or initially if a meteorite falls to the ground, is there any concern for human safety as far as touching it, picking it up, that kind of thing?
No. And there's always misconceptions that, you know, that it's radioactive or something. No, there's nothing radioactive about it. And a lot of people are surprised that probably it's not even hot to the touch, because you have to remember this rock, even though the exterior melted, you know, instantly as it was going through the upper atmosphere because of all the air pressure being put on it, a lot of air friction with the air, it would melt on the outside. But the interior, really, the entire rock had been floating in space probably, you know, literally for billions of years. So it's you know, and space is extremely cold. We're talking temperatures of going down probably to -180 degrees that it was exposed to for, you know, countless of years. So it's very cold to the touch. So there's not, you know, but that's about the extent of it. Other than that, there is no danger of picking up a meteorite, and there's no microorganisms or anything like that involved as well.
The way you describe the temperature and it coming through the atmosphere, it makes it sound like it's like coming through the atmosphere is not a situation where it heats up, more like just simply thaws out.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's there's a very thin exterior layer that just does in fact get singed, you know, and does and can melt. So, you know, when you pick up some of these meteorites, you can actually see that they're very smooth, dark, black exterior, some of them very distinctive. And that really showcases that fiery moment of when it enters the atmosphere, which only lasts for, you know, a second or two at most.
I understand that one of the things that's interesting about this particular meteorite is that when it was in space, it had supposedly an unusual orbit.
Right. So some of these meteors are in a strange type of orbit, you know, that we discover there later on by following its trajectory. And what's interesting is that this particular meteor actually is really a piece of a much larger rock that was probably in orbit, similar to an orbit that basically it's an Earth crossing or orbit. So we call these near Earth objects, and in this particular class of meteors is something that we don't see often in terms of picking them up as meteorites on the ground. So because this particular one has a unique, how can I put it, a chemical fingerprint attached to it, it becomes even that much more valuable to scientists, because they don't get a chance to see these particular types of meteors. So you can think of them as almost like species of meteors. And there are more common ones, and then there are some rarer ones. And this particular one is one of the rarer ones. So definitely something that scientists will want to get a hold of. And that's why everybody's out there hunting for them.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was there not more than one meteorite sighting in the last couple of weeks?
Yes, there was actually over the maritime provinces, the Atlantic provinces of Canada, there was another one. And there are a few other ones. And it's funny because as an astronomy communicator, I get on my social media accounts lots of people writing to me. In the last few weeks, there seems to be a flurry of activity. People, I think, are noticing, you know, looking up in the sky and seeing these fireballs much, you know, at a much higher rate. Now, is there something happening? I doubt it. I think it's mostly that people are noticing something happening. There is a meteor shower, though, I have to say, that is coming towards the end of April. that some of these may be associated with a shower, you know, straggler meteors. But it's kind of unlikely, I think. And I think it's just in the case of people noticing that there are things happening.
Is it possible that these meteorites are connected? In other words, could it possibly be that somewhere out in space, this was some sort of explosion, and this is basically shrapnel being spread by spread around from one initial event?
I think that to know that, we'd have to be able to backtrack the trajectory of these. And to be able to do that is the trajectory of how it entered the atmosphere and which direction were they coming from. To really say if they were from, say, a swarm of meteors that maybe Earth slammed into. And that, by the way, happens a lot. There's over 100 tons of meteors that fall onto Earth every day, each and every day, all across the entire Earth. But large, you know, most of them are the size of the grain of sand, and these are larger ones. And these larger ones, because they produce very very prominent fireballs in the sky, they lend themselves to being photographed and filmed. So I think scientists right now, what they're trying to do is really look at, say, surveillance camera footage, people having stuff on their cell phones, any kind of photographs and videos where they can use that, you know, evidence on film to look at that trajectory and see if they are coming from, say, a single spot in the solar system. Are they originating from the same region? If it is, it could be. It could be, say, there was a collision between two larger meteors and it spread out, like you said, like shrapnel into space, and that swarm of smaller stones is what Earth is slamming into. It could very well happen. But honestly, they're so small, these stones. Anything that's the size of, say, even as large as a house, a large building, we don't have telescopes right now able to pick them out in space. We cannot see them. The only time we know of them is once they enter the atmosphere, just like what happened in Russia in February 2013. We only found out once that 60-ton stone actually entered the atmosphere. Before that, we had no clue.
Okay, so let's hypothetically say, and we've just got about a minute now, let's hypothetically say that beside trajectory to find out where it came from, that we're lucky enough to find that golf ball-sized piece in St. Thomas, Ontario, in a farmer's field, and we're lucky enough to find another piece in the Maritimes. Could we analyze them and see if they came from the same place or the same rock or the same components?
Definitely. Definitely we'll be able to tell if the pieces are related to each other, right, simply because of the chemistry that's in the rock and the mineral content. We'll be able to look at the chemical fingerprints of all these pieces and see how they're related. I mean, today it's amazing what we can do. We even can tell if potentially these meteorites come from Mars, that were blown off through an impact, a meteor impact on Mars. We can do that. So definitely, you know, I think that's where scientists are going to go with this going forward.
Excellent stuff. Always fascinating talking to you, Andrew. People can find more information by going to your website, The Night Sky Guy. What else have you been working on lately?
Definitely, people can also check me out on National Geographic News. I write their Starstruck column, and you can get your weekly dose of what's happening in the night sky on a daily basis right there under Starstruck.
Thank you once again, sir.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website. Go to the Stuff File page for this show, which is show number 0241, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you heard the story about the guy who sued Winnebago over its cruise control? According to the story, he set the cruise control while driving and then left his seat to brew some coffee. Of course, he crashed. And as the story goes, he was mad that the instructions didn't warn him not to do this, so he sued. If you've heard this, you're not alone. It's part of a viral email note about five crazy lawsuits that received the so-called Stella Awards. The awards are named after the woman who spilled coffee on herself and sued McDonald's. The problem is, all the stories are fake. Yes, urban legends. It's easy to believe them, though, because so many real lawsuits are just as outrageous. Let's be fair. There's a better place for information about how junk lawsuits are affecting America than through phony emails. To get the facts, visit our website. The information we have is verified and proves once again that truth is indeed stranger than fiction. Our website is centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Let's go!
Listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to a professional organizer. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But right now, I got a couple more Stuff File news stories to share with you. Marlon Gene Kelly, age 53, has been sentenced to 3 to 12 years in prison after police discovered a large-scale marijuana manufacturing operation at his home in Muskegon, Michigan. Now, time was added for being a felon in possession of a firearm and possessing a firearm while committing a felony, with more time added for him being a fourth-time habitual offender. How did police stumble upon his operation? Glad you asked. He went out and set his burglar alarm, but left the door unlocked, and something tripped the alarm, and responding officers, finding an unlocked door, went inside to check the house. Kelly was arrested when he got back home. Well, you know, he can now count on even tighter security at his new home. Yeah. And an unidentified man had a complaint about a merchant in the London, England borough of Harrow, and complained to the borough council. The merchant, an illegal brothel, and the hooker he chose who refused to have sex with him. The gentleman seemed very aggrieved, a borough spokesperson said. The man said he had traveled from a neighboring borough in North London, so was obviously a bit upset by his wasted trip. He filled in the form pretty seriously and gave us his contact details. Officials took quick action. They shut down the illegal business. A complaint of this sort is a new one on us, said Councillor Susan Hall. I would like the gentleman involved to visit Harrow again, she said. Like our wonderful open parks, leisure centers, and historic churches. Oh, really? Why, do they have more accommodating prostitutes there? I wonder. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? You know, some people have a hard time letting go of stuff, items and belongings they may have had for a long time, but need to get rid of when they're downsizing. Amanda LeBlanc is a professional organizer and designer, and she has her own show on the Style Network. And Amanda joins us on the line right now from New Orleans. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
First of all, what we're talking about here is not necessarily hoarding. That's a whole other item altogether. We're just talking
right.
about letting things go. And in a lot of cases, some of the things have an emotional attachment to the person who owns them. So my first question is, why do we necessarily need to let things go?
Well, I mean, too much stuff in your life is definitely going to weigh you down and have a negative psychological effect. So, you know, if you have too much stuff in your home and not enough storage for it, it just starts to creep out and pile up, and it can be, you know, a definite problem for your life. So it's always good to let go of the excess.
So how do you know what to let go of, or how do you help people let go of items?
Well, I tell people that one of the best things they can do is realize that purging is not a one-phase process. So you really need to look at it in three phases. The first phase is really just those easy items where you know, like, this is trash, or, you know, I don't like this anymore, those easy things to let go of. The second phase is where you start grouping and categorizing items together, where whether it's a garage where you get all your tools together and realize you have 20 hammers, or you pull all of your clothing together and realize you have, you know, 30 black shirts. once you group items together, it helps you to make that second phase of letting go and saying, okay, I definitely have too many of these. So now that I see them together, these are the better of this group, and these are the ones I want to keep.
Okay, so
Go ahead. So still, that phase is pretty easy for most people. It's the third phase where now you realize when you're putting everything away, you only have room for 100 shirts, but you've kept 150. And so now you need to start making those bigger decisions of letting go of items that you really like, but they just don't have room in your life for.
Okay, so what about the things, because we're talking, I guess, about a style situation here in a lot of cases, but what about the things you have an emotional attachment to? Because, you know, even if you have 120 shirts, I'm willing to bet you don't have an attachment to all 120.
You'd be surprised. It really depends on the person. You know, each person that we work with has a different reason that they've asked us to come into their lives. So I've worked with one client who, through the purging process, and I think this kind of answers your question in a roundabout way, but I'll kind of answer it from two angles. But this person had a significant amount of clothing in her life, and it really was taking over. Once we got into the process and started talking, we had a breakthrough moment that neither one of us expected, where she talked about her love of fashion coming as a child and writing down her outfits and putting check marks next to the items where people gave her compliments. And then that dove into a whole other conversation about the lack of feeling of her mother had never said she loved her. Her mother had never told her she was pretty. And so she was using those objects to fill a void in her life. And so letting go of those was really painful because it went back to her childhood. And so, you know, in other aspects where we're maybe a parent has passed away or even a child. We've worked in really sad situations where somebody has lost a child. It's so important to have a professional working with you on that because even in my own home, when I'm dealing with my kids' keepsakes, I have an emotional attachment to those items. And the only way you can have a really good conversation about what to let go of is if you have a non-biased person who's going to give you an honest opinion there with you to help you let go. We even work on with some people saying they're not allowed to touch it. You know, they have to make a decision without touching it because some people, when they touch it, it evokes a bigger emotion. So really, there are just so many ways to approach it.
Is sometimes, like the woman you described just a few moments ago, is sometimes the situation of people not being able to let go of items, does it have something to do with also self-esteem?
Definitely. You know, I've worked with a social worker who wound up being a client of mine, and she was borderline hoarding. And the reason was because she was in the foster care system as a child and was tossed around from home to home and could not afford more than a pair of shoes. And they were worn and had holes in them. Well, now she had 250 pair of shoes because she wanted to prove that she could now afford those things. And so it is the clutter is the symptom. It's never the reason. And so you really do have to work with clients and say, you know, let's figure out why you're here. You know, whether it's, you know, china and dishes or shoes or something from a parent who's passed, no matter what it is that's gotten you to the cluttered state, the excess in your life, there is a reason that we need to get to in order to just solve this and not temporarily fix it.
Speaking of shoes, the old saying, the cobbler's children often go without shoes. As someone who does what you do, you just mentioned earlier some of your children's keepsakes. Is it even difficult for you to let things go?
There are things in my life like keepsakes. You know, we went through, my family and I went through Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And so during that process, we lost our entire home. And we started our life over with two suitcases and two babies. So it really gave me a whole new perspective on what's really important. And when I'm there and I'm counseling you on what to keep and what to let go of, I really have some very practical life experience of how it's going to affect you and what's important and what isn't. And so that, you know, my mission in doing professional organizing has always been twofold. One, it's my therapy. I'd probably be, you know, locked away somewhere if I weren't organizing, because it calms me. It frees me. I enjoy this process. So I started out, I guess, very selfishly motivated. But the second phase of it happened after Katrina, when I realized this was a bigger mission. This wasn't just about getting your home in order. This was about getting your life in order. This is about reprioritizing your life and trying to get you to understand that the material possessions in your life are not what's important. And you have to let go of them, because at the end of the day, it is about making memories with the people in your life. It is about getting outside of those material possessions and really living. And that's, I might use organizing your closet as a method to get in there, but my message always goes beyond.
I mentioned in the introduction that one of the things that people might have a problem getting rid of is items when they're downsizing, because when they're downsizing, it tells you that it's somebody who's probably mature, has lived a life and collected a lot of stuff over the years and now has to purge some of it. But I'm guessing one of the most harder times to downsize and get rid of things is in the case of a widow or widower.
Yes. It sure is a very difficult thing. And, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law passed away before I met my husband, and still years into my marriage, I was helping my mother-in-law let go of those items. It's a process. It's not going to happen overnight, and nor should you. It's one of those things where you have to really be ready, and you have to do it slowly, and you don't want to push yourself beyond what you're comfortable with. Now, that being said, 10, 15 years down the road, you should be significantly past all of that, and you should have kept the things that are going to be significant to you and let go of the things that aren't. And if you're not at that point, then it's time to call somebody who can help you.
I mentioned in the introduction that you have your own show on the Style Network. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, the show is kind of follows our business and the daily life of how we go in and help people reorganize, and kind of the chaos, I guess, behind the scenes of how we make some of these things come together, and the obstacles that we face in trying to control everything and some things being uncontrollable. So it's got a lot of really great stories and some really good takeaways and before and afters for people.
And people can also find out more information by going to your website, which is theamandas.com, correct?
Yes.
And what kind of information can they find out on the website?
You're going to get all the information about how we work with clients. You'll be able to see some great before and afters and get some ideas. There's also some self-guided, organizing how-tos that you can click and download so that you can organize on your own. So there's a wealth of information and knowledge there. And also there's a lot of ways to contact us and have us help you.
Excellent. Amanda, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Professional organizer Amanda LeBlanc. Amanda's website is theamandas.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0241, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A West Gardner, Maine man is facing a host of charges after reportedly jumping from the driver's seat into the backseat of his moving car in an effort to hide from a Richmond police officer. Scott Tucker, age 39, who was driving without a license and wanted on numerous warrants, let his 2003 Chevrolet Malibu coast down Main Street as he continued to hide in the backseat, according to Richmond Police Chief Scott McMaster. Tucker's escape bid was ultimately foiled when the car eventually stopped and he tried to jump out of the back and run away. He could not do so because the child's safety locks were engaged, McMaster said. Tucker was ultimately arrested on charges of operating after a suspension, driving to endanger, failure to stop for an officer, and violating conditions of release. He was originally stopped for a faulty taillight. Now, Tucker refused to pull over when the cruiser's blue lights and siren were turned on. That's when he jumped into the back seat. The driverless Malibu continued down the road at about 40 miles per hour, careening from side to side off snowbanks and nearly causing a crash with another car. As the Malibu approached an intersection, the front seat passenger, yes, there was a passenger, A relative who owned the car but was not named by police because he was not charged leaned over to try and control the vehicle. Eventually, the passenger was able to bring the car to a stop. Tucker, who apparently got lost on his way to Gardner from South Portland, was not, surprisingly, intoxicated. He was stone cold sober. He said, "I panicked." Tucker was quoted as also saying, "I hopped into the back seat hoping you wouldn't see me driving." Yeah. Well, now, why would someone hop into the back seat of a moving car that they were driving thinking that they could elude cops by hiding there? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0241. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you can find information and links on our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0241. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.